Well, as I remember the Great Trek, it started on the flats up near the CNR station on Main Street. There was a great bonfire built of old packing cases and boxes, very large and very high, and this was lit on fire. And from that, we marched down Main Street to Hastings, down Hastings to Granville, up Granville to Davies Street, where streetcars were waiting for us, and we all climbed on the old streetcars, went across the old Granville Street Bridge to Broadway, up Broadway to 10th and Sassamad, where we got out of the car. And there were piles of stones for us to pick up, which we carried, and we marched out a muddy road to the university site itself, carrying the banners and so on, and threw the stones in the heap which were later used to build the cairn. The day before the trek, several of us in agriculture, who were freshmen in agriculture, had been assigned to dig the hole for the foundation of the cairn. And amongst the people, as I remember digging, were the Honorable Arthur Lang and several others of our class.
Were there floats and things in the grave
too? Yes, there were lots of floats and banners. I don't remember that part very well. I tell you, there's a UBC film of the Great Trek, which I've just got out of the archives, and we're going to show at our dinner on the 30th of July. The Premier of British Columbia at that time was Honest John Oliver, and the general opinion was that he was not very interested in education, university education. And something had to be done to bring it home to him very forcibly and very vigorously. And that's why the idea of getting the signatures of thousands and thousands of citizens in the Lower Mainland and in the interior, and these were piled up and taken to Victoria as a visible proof of the interest of people in the province in education.
Could you turn off that?
As I understand it, the university was originally planned to be a university specializing in agriculture and forestry. They were the two industries in this province which most people made their money at the time. But as the university grew, the arts faculty grew very fast, and so the balance changed. Well, my recollections of my first and only lecture from Dr. Sedgwick, I arrived in the classroom late, and he objected very strenuously to anybody coming into his room late. I was a freshman and been to university one day, and I never heard of Dr. Sedgwick and knew nothing about him. I sat down, and he was talking about the compositions or themes that must be turned in 8 during the year. And he was making the point very carefully that they must be carefully worked out, and there couldn't be lots of little errors throughout the whole thing, because that was just sloppiness and untidiness. If there was one great error, one great mistake, he wouldn't mind, because that was just a mistake. And he said, for instance, pointing at me, "Here's a young man sitting down here who's come into the class late, and he has pink and white face and is clean and tidy looking. Now, if he should have a smut across his cheek, we'd all know that was an accident, happened on the way. But if he was dirty behind the ears, we'd know he was just a lazy, dirty little freshman." Whereupon he came down off the podium and walked slowly to me and pulled one ear down, looked behind my ear, held up his hands and waved them in absolute horror, while the 300 freshmen screamed with glee. When the laughing stopped a little, he went around to the other side, pulled the other ear down, looked behind the ear, held up his hands in horror, and walked slowly up to the podium. When the class had got back to normal, he said, "What do you know? What's this university coming to? A freshman with clean ears."
How about this one you're just going to say about Freddie Wood?
One of the great institutions on the campus in the old days was the University Players Club. This was the amateur theatrical group that was founded by the students and directed by its honorary president, Professor Frederick Wood, F.G.C. Wood. And Professor Wood made the Players Club one of the outstanding dramatic groups in the whole of Canada. In many ways, Freddie showed an absolute stroke of genius in making it exclusive. He held competitive auditions and only allowed a certain number of people a year into the club. It was looked upon as a great honor to have made the grade. And at Christmas time, the club put on 4 one-act plays, and the new people were allowed to play in the one-act plays. If you didn't get a part in one of the one-act plays at Christmas, you were dropped from the club, and you could audition again or not, but you were not in. If you got in one of the Christmas plays, you became a permanent member of the club. And then the second great event of the year was the spring production, which auditions took place the first week in January, and then you were rehearsed like mad in all the noon hours until the production itself, which usually ran 3 nights down in the Lyric Theatre on Granville Street. This was a great event. The faculty turned out, the Board of Governors, the Senate, the town's great and wealthy were invited, and was a gala opening. Then following examinations, in the period following examinations and before graduation, while the professors were marking the papers, Professor Wood arranged a tour of British Columbia, taking culture out to the hinterland. And the students moved around playing in many different towns. I was on the tour 2 years in succession. One year we played 23 different towns, another year 25 different towns. Professor Wood very skillfully kept in touch all through the year with groups in each town, maybe the IODE or the PTA or the Women's Auxiliary to the Anglican Church. And they would be our sponsors in the town, and we would come there on condition that they would sell a certain number of tickets and pay a certain part of the expense. And his cleverness in his public relations was writing 2 or 3 times during the year, sending clippings to all of these people, and in the end, making the people feel it was a great and distinct honor to have the University Players Club appear in their community. At each town we arrived in, we would be received, usually by the mayor. If not the mayor, the member of parliament, or at least the chairman of the school board, and we'd be taken to tea or tennis, the local tennis club, and we'd rush back and set up the scenery, get into our costumes, put on the play, and after the play was over, there'd be another reception given for us. We'd pack up the scenery, get to bed, get up early in the morning, move on to the next town, and so on day after day. And this was all organized, and it was great fun and excitement for the people participating, and it seemed as if the people throughout British Columbia enjoyed it too. One of the comic sides of this was, in years that we would put on a real comedy or a farce, which was gay and merry, we would get word of mouth advertising, and the next year tickets would sell like mad. But next year we might choose a play which was cultural, something by Isman or something like this, that was long-haired, and the people would come and groan and say, we didn't buy tickets for this. So there was a up and down fluctuation in the audiences depending on the kind of play that the Players Club took around the country.
Anything else?
Each year, the different faculties, students used to have give a dance or the ball, and one of the great events was the Aggie Ball. The Aggie students had made a great affair of this and used to rent old Lester Court on Davie Street near Robson, near Burrard. And the thing at the Aggie Ball was we had the largest orchestra and we also had the best food. We would purchase chickens from the university farm 2 or 3 days before, stew these up, grind them up, and make sandwiches. The chicken sandwiches at the Aggie Ball were noted. At one of the Aggie Balls, they decorated the ballroom by having a pen of chickens in one corner, a cow in another corner, pigs in another corner, and sheep in another corner to give a real atmosphere. And I, as a freshman, had the responsibility of taking one of the pigs home, a very small pig, I must admit, but I had to take it home in the streetcar and keep it at my house overnight and return it to the university farm in the morning, also by the streetcar.
Did it cause any trouble?
just a tiny pig, but it didn't get on the truck. And at the last minute, they discovered it wasn't on the truck, and so I had to look after it for the night.